This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Chicago.
Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Good morning, and it's a special edition of Tyler and Shay with you till 11 a.m., leading you in to Bleck and Abdallah's pregame tailgates as the Bears take on the Packers. 3:25 up at Lambeau, and if what's taking place in the city right now is any indication, it feels like football outside today, Shay.
Yeah, it looks,
every bit of it looks like December football.
It's major. Tracy was in here on Thursday saying the kickoff temperature is going to be 15 degrees, and my instant reaction was, we got real ball.
Yep.
We got real ball on a Sunday afternoon.
Going to hurt a little extra when they're battling in the trenches today, but Bears and Packers, it is the biggest game of the year. It's the biggest game this city's had, really, in years, too. The magnitude of this game, even for a regular season game, feels amplified. And I don't mean to like live prisoner of the moment, but I cannot remember a Bears-Packers regular season game meaning this much since the Randall Cobb game, where he breaks free and it was a chance for the Bears to get into the playoffs, and all of a sudden it slips through their grasp. To me, this game, even though a spot in the playoffs is not going to be clinched today, mathematically, by any team, it certainly feels like whoever wins today, A, has an inside track at the division and should feel really good about their playoff chances as a whole.
You think that this is a bigger regular season Packers game than winning the NFC North?
But that was only one-sided stakes.
And yeah, that, I mean, that Packers team was not good.
Yeah, because that Packers team at that point had kind of, it seemed like, cashed everything in back in 2018. I feel like when you have the dual-sided stakes, that's what makes today as big as it needs to be. And that's why I feel the way that I do. Like, even that game in 2018, it feels weird, especially because the Bears lost the first meeting between the two teams on opening night. It was, what a game that was. But it almost felt like they were supposed to win that game. Like, this game, I wouldn't even say it feels like the Bears are supposed to win this game.
No.
Because, first of all, you're a damn near touchdown underdog. You're going on the road. You're going to Lambeau. You know it's going to be one of those type of environments
it's
today.
It's Toyota-thon.
It is Toyota-thon. Have you seen also the dueling stat with that, too?
No.
Caleb during Happy Honda Days is, like, just as good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's incredible.
Boy, we have
sample size, but yeah.
We have a real rivalry cooking up here, don't we?
Toyota, Honda, Caleb Love, Bears, Packers, all the good stuff there. In 2018, in that second meeting when the Bears ended up clinching at Soldier Field, I went into that game feeling like the Bears are supposed to win this game. And they had the body of work to show for it from the entire season. They had become a dominant team at that point. This time around, I mean, I don't think it would shock anybody if the Bears won, given what we've seen so far this season. I don't think it should shock anybody if the Packers won this game either. Now, it just kind of comes down to what is the margin of victory on both sides, because a Bears blowout would certainly shock me. A Packers blowout, I don't think, would shock me as
much. I was
much.
Just going to say, the only result that would shock me is if the Bears just bomb them.
What if it looks like Black Friday, though, where, okay, the final score is inside of double digits, but the Bears dominated that game for 60 minutes.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me, but that, like, I didn't even classify that as a blowout because...
But it felt like a blowout.
Look, it did, but I'll tell you the one thing that I can't have happen today, and that happened on Black Friday. You can't get stuck on 10 points the way that they did. And have empty drives for basically two quarters. Like, that did bother me. And it's obviously you were dominant. You were the more physical team in the game. You doubled them up on first downs. You took the ball away twice. You just thoroughly outclassed the Eagles. But the concern that I don't think enough people have talked about all week is your offense got stuck on 10 points for, what, 25 minutes?
And how many times has it done that this year? It happened in the Viking game on the road. It happened in the first Viking game, too. I'm not going to give as much blame to that because, I mean, it's the opening game of the season. And it happened in the Ravens game, and it came back to bite you in the ass in the Ravens game. It happened in the Saints game for a little bit, and luckily you had some drives late that helped you put that thing over the top.
Frankly, without a missed extra point by Philly, it would have come back to bite you in the ass against Philly. But it just, like, you were able to weather the storm and then end the game as the more physical side with some big-time plays. I don't think the Bears can afford today, especially without Roma Dunze and what Ben Johnson has said to us about the passing game, that it has to be better. I don't think you can afford to have Caleb missing passes or receivers misrunning routes and issues in the passing game.
See, this is where everyone always wanted to make the comps of, all right, when are the Bears going to look like last year's Lions offense or even the year before that Lions offense? And it's showing you right now that we are in the 101 stages of Ben Johnson offense. What last year's Lions team was, that's what 301 Ben Johnson offense looks like. And that's when you start blowing teams out. That's why the Lions had an incredible point differential last year, despite not having a stellar defense by any measures. Like, last year's Lions defense is really not all that different from this year's Bears defense in terms of the battling injuries all season long, critical injuries at that too, and just really not having all that great of a unit as a whole either. I don't think this Bears defense is anything special. I think when they're at their healthiest, they're probably what, middle of the pack, like anywhere between like 16 to 18 ranked. But it's the turnovers that are making the huge difference this year. And who knows what that looks like year to year. But right now, I really only care about 2025 and what you can accomplish in 2025 and into the playoffs in 2026. So when I look at, can this Bears team start to really put away teams moving forward like what we saw the Lions do a season ago with Ben Johnson leading that offense? That's what it looks like when you get the quarterback play that we saw out of Jared Goff last year. If Caleb looks like that, this team will start putting teams away in pretty quick fashion.
Yeah, and I think he can get there. It's just, if we're talking about today going up to Lambeau, and it's why, look, I'm not saying Bears can't win. This was the genesis of this was, I'd be stunned if the Bears walked up there and blew them out.
Yeah.
That would shock me because I think it would require something that we haven't seen from their passing game all season, where I don't think at Lambeau. By the way, do you see the snow on Lambeau Field right now?
They're getting the villagers ready with shovels
Holy
and stuff.
Lord. Like this, it just, to me, this isn't the weather scenario. This isn't the environment that you want to be in, relying on your passing game to get you over the hump, which is fine because they have the best run attack in the NFL. So really, it's just why I'd be shocked they blow them out, because I think their path to victory is own time of possession, get first downs on the ground, and just eat the clock away.
Yeah, and it's tough to blow a team out with the defense that you have and the style that you want to win a game in, too. This team needs to win with the run game today. And I think you have a perfect opportunity to do so as well because of the fact that Green Bay's compromised on the other side. Yeah. They're getting some really untimely injuries. Obviously, the Devontae Wyatt injury from a week ago, he's out. He's on IR at this point. Lucas Van Ness, another key defensive line piece. And it's not Micah Parsons' strong suit. If you can wear down and empty the gas tank on him through the first two or three quarters, then maybe when you need to throw in the fourth quarter, you're not getting the Micah Parsons that intimidates you nearly as much.
Or you just offset their ability to really pin their ears back. Because if you allow them to lock up the run game, what's going to happen to you is what's going to happen to Detroit on Thanksgiving, where you just get Micah knowing you have to throw the ball, pinning his ears back, and he will get to the quarterback. That's what he does.
And listen, this Bears offensive line has been great all season long, but remember the games that it was given trouble. I always think back to that Vegas game that we were both at.
Yep.
And what Max Crosby did in that game, he almost won that game by himself.
Yep.
And Micah Parsons is that and probably a little bit more.
I was going to say, Micah Parsons is much better than Max Crosby.
He has the ability to win this game on his own, just like Max Crosby did. And let me tell you this Packers offense a little bit better than what Vegas has to offer.
It's not a shot at anybody. It's just that the best offensive lines in history get mollywopped by Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
This is the kind of matchup that you're walking into. And Micah, I think over the last couple weeks, I know there were down stretches early in the year. The Dallas game was stuck out as a big time disappointment. I think he only had the one sack. Over the last few weeks, it's felt like Micah's heating up a little bit.
For sure. And he's one of those guys, he'll move in waves, and really all pass rushers, they'll move in waves and have these flows where they're just getting one and a half, or like maybe they only get one sack in a game, but it almost felt like because of the pressure that they had on the quarterback and maybe how some of the other teammates got involved along the defensive line and got to the quarterback, it feels like they have a three sack type of game because of the pressure that they're applying. Bears fans, we want to hear from you. 312-332-3776. It's Packer Day. How are you feeling heading into Lambeau today? 312-332-3776. Let's kick it off with Isaac in Denver. How are we doing, Isaac?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Love your work. Yeah, man, it is Packers week. It's Packers Day. Let's go, baby. So I know people, like, I think after beating the Eagles, it was a general consensus, all right, the Bears are pretty much legit. And I'm pretty confident because I do think running game and turnovers do travel. So even if the Bears defense isn't great, they seem to find a knack for getting turnovers. I just still have a question. If the Packers find a way to shut down the Bears running attack or at least limit it, can that passing attack find a way to get the job done for us? And I think if the Bears can make a statement and do that, I know the weather conditions aren't great, but if they could do that, I would have no problem being like, all right, man, let's go into the playoffs with some confidence. But if they can't, I'm still going to have those questions. So let's go. Let's get it done. Bear down.
All right. Bear down, Isaac. Thanks for the phone call.
I think the problem here, like if anybody's trying to analyze this and if we lose, then it's a reality check. We aren't that good. If we win, we're a Super Bowl team. I think the latter's true. I don't think if you lose, it's some reality gut check. We're actually not as good as we thought we were.
No, you're going to lose games in the NFL.
Yeah, this is the whole point. Like, I feel like the Packers are going to win today. And it's not that I don't think the Bears are good. It's just you don't get to wake up and win every game that you play in the NFL.
Yeah, it's
not the way the league works.
Right, and especially for this Bears team that's kind of up and coming, too. Like, listen, we see marquee matchups in the NFL every week, right? Like, when the Rams played the Seahawks, one of those teams had to lose that game. And for the Seahawks' sake, it was unfortunate that they did, but it doesn't, to be honest, we came out of it saying, you know what, I kind of feel a little bit better about this Seahawks team than maybe before. Like, go out and make a statement today, even if it's a loss. And I'm not here to play the moral victory card, because I think when you beat the Eagles, you kind of throw that stuff out the window.
Of course.
But go out there and show you belong on the same field, because at the beginning of the season, both you and I looked at this Packers team and said, that's the best team in the NFC. Now things have changed. The Rams are clearly looking like that best team in the NFC.
But I think the Packers are still two.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I look at, if you go out there and prove that you can hang with the number two team in the NFC on their home field, you've shown something to the rest of the league, I think, at that point.
Yeah, it's a huge prove it spot. And it's what last week was to the nth degree, where you go out today and you win this game. We are going to be coming in tomorrow morning talking about this is a Super Bowl team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is your opportunity to make a statement that defensively the issues are overblown and you can put a lid on the Packers offense. And offensively, you can hang with anybody on the road in iffy weather conditions and win an NFL game. That's Super Bowl stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's championship stuff.
Yeah. For a lot of people who maybe still had their doubts about what this Bears team is and what they could be, a lot of that skepticism was rooted in, I'll believe it when I see you beat the Packers. And today's that day.
Yeah.
Today is the day. You have that game now on your schedule. You finally get to play the Packers this year in week 14.
It's the ultimate prove it spot. But again, I want to make it clear. I'm not sitting here telling you that if they lose, it's some overblown reaction Monday where we go, oh, they're actually not good. No, dude, you don't get to win every game that you play in the NFL, especially not when you're playing against good teams.
9-4 is still a damn good record. And I'm not here to, like, sell you, all right, don't even go out there and play the game. But, like, you have a chance to win this game. And I think I feel a little bit better about a win than you do. But this Bears team, like, they've gone out and kind of shown us a little bit of something that we have not seen in this city in quite some time.
Yeah, and it's been awesome.
It's been a fun ride. Just to get to this point is the joyride of the week-to-week NFL winning football team. You spend the whole week like getting hyped up, getting ready for the game, and then Sunday comes, and boom, you're sitting on your couch. And when you see winners 9 times out of 12 tries and 9 times out of the last 10 weeks, It's different.
It's also great when you didn't expect it. Like the idea that this year, I thought they'd be 10-7. I wanted them to get into the playoffs. It looks like 10-7 won't get you into the playoffs the way the NFC is going. Mm-hmm. But I thought 10-7 was pretty realistic. The idea that they're 9-3, they have already so overachieved against expectation and surprised so much that all this is fun. Like this is the pressure's off. That's why people have said all week the pressure's really on Green Bay, and I think that's true. They went chips in. They need to win this year. They just traded for Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
The Bears, it's like, we're gonna be here a while.
Yeah. You got a young quarterback, you got a lot of young, controllable players, so it is fun, it is exciting. Real quick, let's squeeze in Joe, who's in Louisville. Morning, Joe.
Hey guys, how we doing?
What's going on, man?
I know we're talking about how Ben's going to scheme around Micah Parsons, but I'm curious how Dennis Allen's going to manufacture a pass rush, and if he's going to use Don personnel to do that, blitzing CJ and Kyler Gordon, because Jordan Love's good against the blitz.
Yeah, good point, good phone call there. I do think that what we've seen from Dennis Allen is a guy who's done a lot more with less. And you know you're not getting much of a pass rush out of your defensive line, but the way he's deployed C.J. Gardner-Johnson, the fact that C.J. Gardner-Johnson was picked up off the scrap heap a couple weeks ago and already has 3 sacks as a defensive back is crazy to me. That's where I think Kyler Gordon's so important too, and I think getting creative with when you choose to blitz guys like T.J. Edwards, you should get Noah Sewell back today too. When you get creative with using those guys in your attack to get after the passer, that's going to be, you got to find ways to confuse Jordan Love, who's done a very good job of sack avoidance and also just like navigating through pressure and the blitz, like Joe said.
Well, I was just going to also, like, the blitz and pressure are two different things, and there's not a quarterback in the world that likes pressure. So if you can get pressure on Jordan Love, that's where just heat him up, make him make quicker decisions, speed up his clock. That's how you win. How you generate that pressure is a different conversation, because I don't think this team's capable really of doing it without blitzing. And that means Dennis Allen has to get creative. If that means you walk up linebackers just to have them dive back in coverage at times and try to get in Jordan Love's head a little bit, that's what you're going to have to do. Mm-hmm. But if there's anybody in the league I trust to come up with pretty exotic blitz packages and confuse a quarterback, Dennis Allen's one of those guys.
Yep. 312-332-3776. Talking Bears and Packers with you this morning. How do you feel? Do you feel like the Bears can win this game? They're 6.5-point dogs, but we've seen them overcome that before so far this season. 312-332-3776. More Tyler and Shea when we come back.
This is Tyler and Shea. Tyler and Shea. Welcome back to Tyler Rocky and Shea Norley. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
Talking Bears with you on this Sunday morning. It's Tyler Rocky and Shea Norling with you till 11. And then it's Bleck and Abdallah taking over with the pregame tailgate. That'll lead you into Waddle, Sylvie, and Dion on the network pregame. And then don't forget, after the game, it's Peggy and Yurko, network postgame. And then after that, the postgame with Pat the Designer, Jeff Meller, and Jason McKee. And of course, you'll hear the call of the game starting at 3:25 with Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, and Jason McKee on the sidelines. So full day of action here. Over 12 hours of coverage on this Bears-Packers Sunday rivalry day, as it's the first meeting between these two teams. Remember last year when all of the divisional games were so backloaded? And now I kind of love where it's at in the schedule this year for the Bears. You get a feel for who the Bears are as a team, and you still kind of have a, even though it's been a little bit of a weird up and down season for the Packers, like you look at some of their losses and it's questionable how they have lost some of these games, but it's been an up and down season for the Packers, but you feel like they're starting to find their stride a little. And a lot of that has to do with what they're getting quarterback wise from Jordan Love. We saw it on Thursday against Detroit. He's starting to look like Toyota-thon Jordan Love, which can be a scary thing to go up against. But at this point in the season, like, this Bears offense is moving at its best, and I think this Packers team is starting to find its best gear. And that's what I want to see in December, divisional football, and we get 2 in 3 weeks now.
Yeah, and look, do you think it's a little I never know if it's just football guy cliche, like the brain pretzel that we put ourselves in sometimes thinking about football. It's tough to beat a team twice in 3 weeks. But is it a little daunting on the schedule the way that it's set up? Because I said earlier in the week, I think the home team's going to win each of these games. The way that this league is, you can't win every game. And the idea that you're playing the same team twice in 3 weeks, it just feels to me like a split.
So,
but I also think, to that point, a split would be an outstanding outcome.
Yes, that's where I was going to go. If you told me heading into this 2 out of 3 stretch here that you're going to split with the Green Bay Packers, I sign up for that every day of the week.
It's important, too, because you're going to have to keep pace with the NFC West. The records in the NFC West are insane as far as making the playoffs. Splitting with the Pack, with the whole Detroit as Doug, mm-hmm. would effectively eliminate the Lions. It just makes their pathway so immensely difficult.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Bears fans, and not to like get too far ahead of ourselves here, but a lot of Bears fans are looking at that Browns game and pretty much already sharpieing in a win. And whether that's right or wrong, I think it's the way that you feel about how the Bears are going to be going up against the Browns. Not to say it won't be a tough game, because we know what that defensive line can bring to the table. But if you're telling me that the Bears are going to win 2 of their next 3 games, you're effectively locking up a playoff spot at that point.
Yeah, of course. I think they're going to get in. There's a world where 11 wins doesn't get you in. I talked to you about it earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if people have paid attention to the NFC standings. This is as beastly of a conference as I can remember seeing in my life.
Yeah.
I did the playoff machine simulator on ESPN.com earlier in the week and came out with a scenario where the 11-6 Seahawks were left home.
Jeez.
So, like, it just the records in the NFC are so crazy that if the Bears are the 1 seed right now, if they lose today, there's a world they are the 7 seed tomorrow because everybody is so bunched up.
Yep.
So it's just every winnable game that you have, you got to find ways.
Yep. And I think the one thing that's really helping the Bears out right now is their conference record. Their conference record right now is 6-2. It is the second best in all of the NFC right now. Now, the problem is the team with the best conference record is the San Francisco 49ers, who currently occupy the 7th spot. But you have the head-to-head game with San Francisco in the second to last week of the year, so you have a chance to win that head-to-head, and then you can take the tiebreaker out of things. And you'd be handing San Francisco a conference loss while you'd be gaining a conference win on top of that. So everything right now, tiebreaker-wise, feels good for the Bears. Like, I don't think if there's a scenario where the Bears are in play for the 1 seed, they'll pretty much win a tiebreaker over every team that they could be going up against.
Unless it's Green Bay. But they won't be in play for the 1 unless they beat Green Bay.
That's true.
Which is
also, Green Bay is really not going to be in a tiebreaker with anybody because they have a literal tie in their record. It's part of why I actually thought it would be better for the Bears if the Lions won on Thursday night against the Cowboys, because for tiebreaker purposes, you can still go out and beat the Lions and have the head-to-head tiebreaker over them. Even though you have the head-to-head win over the Cowboys, it's very unlikely you will ever find yourself in a tiebreak situation with the Cowboys because of the tie in their record.
It's also just bizarre the way the ties work in the NFL and how valuable that half game becomes in a season where you only play 17 games. But I do know, factually, like if it comes down to the Bears and Rams and play for the 1 seed at the end of the season, there is no world where the Rams can win a tiebreaker against the Bears. It's mathematically impossible. Mm-hmm. The Rams do not play enough conference games down the stretch that they can possibly beat the Bears in a tiebreak situation. So if you just handle your business and beat Green Bay twice, you're going to be the 1 seed in the NFC.
Yeah, and that's where you sit right now. You are the 1 seed. I feel like we went into the week all hyped up, hey, the Bears are the 1 seed, Bears are the 1 seed. And then it kind of got lost on a lot of people, I feel like, going into Thursday and Friday. But it is where you stand right now. Point differential be damned. You've got one of the worst point differentials of a team that would make the playoffs if the season ended today. But now part of that is buoyed by you lose 52-21 against Detroit. But the fact that you've worked your way back, I think it makes you feel good about where you're at. You're finding ways to win one possession games. How sustainable is that? We'll find out and see. But especially when you've got a defense that plays the way that this Bears defense does. But that's where turnovers are going to be critical today, because the Packers are the best team in the league at not giving the ball away.
Yep.
And if you can find a way to take the ball away even just once from this Packers team, you put yourself in a pretty good position to win, because in all of the Packers' losses and ties this year, they've turned the ball over at least once. In their wins, in their eight wins, they've only turned the ball over a grand total of one time in those eight games.
Yeah, and look, they're only the best team in turnovers because you caused the best team in turnovers a week ago to drop by taking the ball away twice. And I think a lot of the things that we talk about as unsustainable, they are unsustainable. You can't win every one-score game. It's impossible. You can't just wake up and get two turnovers a game in the NFL. It's impossible. However, as an addendum to that, there are times in a season where it will just happen. And you'll probably pay the price for it in 2026, where you're not going to win one-score games. I'll give you an example. Last year, the Chiefs go 12-1 in one-score games. This year, they're 1-5.
Yeah.
They're paying the price now for you're playing a bunch of close games. You're playing with fire all the time. So now in 2025, they're paying the price for what happened in 2024. But in 2024, it got them to the Super Bowl. So if the Bears are just young and dumb and don't know any better and they don't look down and realize what's actually happening, they can just keep taking the ball away and winning one score games as far as it will take them.
Yeah, and listen, that's a 2026 problem.
Bingo.
We'll figure that out in 2026. Maybe you go out and you trade for a pass rusher, or you draft a highly touted pass rusher in this upcoming draft, and all of a sudden, some of your pass rushing woes have been fixed to a certain degree, and that changes things. It's when you stay stagnant year to year. Like, look at the Chiefs roster. Not much has changed year to year.
Yeah, and their pass rush has aged. It's not as effective as it used to be.
So
they really struggle to pressure quarterbacks.
You're going
to
lose some of those 50-50 games when you keep things status quo, albeit a very good status quo, especially when you've got Patrick Mahomes under center for you. And I mean, there's even an example within your own division. Look at what the Minnesota Vikings have done a number of times, where they've been so good in one-score games one year, and then it comes back to bite them in the ass the next year.
Yep.
But while you're here and while you're winning these one-score games, ride the Lightning. Ride the Lightning into the playoffs and make a run.
That's my point. It's like 2026 it's not going to be what this year is. You can't repeat being the one-score game demon that takes the ball away 100 times. It's not going to happen. But can you do it for four more weeks, five more weeks? It's kind of just become who you are. You're a team that's going to dominate on the ground. You're a team that's great on third down. You're a team that takes the ball away. And you're a team that is clutch in one-score situations.
Yep. And you've got a quarterback who's proven it in the fourth quarter, too. Not just this year, but last year as well.
It's just your identity in 2025 is that. So I'm kind of at a point now that we're sitting on December 7th. I'm going to stop with the you can't keep winning this way. It's who they are in 2025. Mm-hmm. At some point, you just got to accept this is what they are.
Yep.
Whether it works in a playoff scenario, we'll find out. But for five more weeks, can you get a bye? Maybe. I'm not going to tell you can't.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us, Bears fans, it is Bears and Packers, one of the longest rivalries in all of sports, one of the best rivalries in all of sports. We're talking about it with you till 11 a.m. here on ESPN Chicago.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Getting you ready for Bears and Packers here. Remember the last time the Bears went up to Lambeau, they did go out and beat the Green Bay Packers. This was in the new year, so they're already 1-0 against the Packers in 2025. Although I don't always like to claim that victory. There's some people who are always like, oh, you beat the Packers, right? It all feels good. For me, you played the Sheboygan Packers last year. When you beat them, they pulled Josh Jacobs after the first quarter. They pulled Jordan Love before halftime. A number of other players in that game didn't really play. Go out and beat the Green Bay Packers today.
Yep.
Go out and beat the Green Bay Packers today. You've got a chance to. 6.5-point dogs, but we've seen them erase that deficit before. They remember, when they were going on their win streak right out of the gate, they were underdogs in each of their first three wins, outright dogs. And then you've been an underdog a couple of other times since, and you found ways to win these games. Starting to get a little bit of respect back, but now you've got a Green Bay Packers team who's viewed as one of the NFC's best and really one of the NFL's best, and it's being reflected in the point spread today.
I think it's a bit of a mentality that they've adopted as a team, too. Remember, I think it might have been before the Cowboy game, and the Bears were slight dogs. Mm-hmm. And Ben Johnson was asked about the point spread, and if he felt like they were underdogs, he said yes. Like, I think they have adopted a little bit of this, nobody believes in us, so let's go show them.
Yeah. And 6.5 points in the NFL is nobody believes in us.
Yeah, that's they're telling you. Mm-hmm. Like, the market is telling you, we don't believe this is legit.
Yeah. And but maybe it's just for one game. But, yeah, like, when this game comes back to Soldier Field in a couple weeks, the Packers, barring what happens today, the Packers will still probably be slightly favored in the game. I'd imagine probably in the neighborhood of, like, 3 or 4 points. Mm-hmm. But go out and then defend your home turf in 2 weeks.
And so, the other thing, too, is, like, the Bears don't need people to believe in them.
No.
They don't need me to feel like they're going to win today. They don't need anybody to feel that way. They don't need the market to respect them. They don't need any of it. They don't care. They believe in themselves in that locker room, and they have a coach that's inspired them. Like, just ride this thing as long as you can.
Listen, there's a reason why they don't play these games on the TI-84, right? They play these games on the field, and the Bears have proven when you need to go out and punch someone in the mouth, they did it last week against Philly, and they punched hard last week.
Tyler calling all the gamblers nerds.
Well, it's not just the gamblers.
Football's not played on a spreadsheet, loser.
Yeah, put the graph paper back in your backpack, pal. Jordan's in Boise, Idaho. Morning, Jordan.
Jordan. We got you?
All right, Jordan, we'll put you back on hold, try to get back to you here. Chris in Berwyn. Morning, Chris.
Hey.
What's going on?
So I heard you talking about, you know, this is who we are, but weren't we had a pretty poor run game at the beginning of the season, and we've improved that, so would it be out of the realm of possibility that we improve the pass game a little bit more with the 5 games to go?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chris. I would say it is kind of tough to pick up that skill in December when throwing conditions aren't ideal, and it's been a struggle. Now, I'm not here to say that Caleb's not going to have a 300-yard passing game between now and the end of the year. He certainly could. He certainly could show moments of brilliance. But it's tough to develop this thing at this point in the season when you haven't necessarily seen any level of consistency.
I would also say, didn't everybody kind of expect the ground game to get better? I mean, you had an elite rush offense scheme play caller in Ben Johnson, one of the best in, I will just say, the best in the league at scheming a rushing offense. We just kind of felt like those first few weeks, this offensive line needs time. It was 3 new guys on the O-line. Really, 4 new guys on the O-line because Braxton got sat down. Mm-hmm. You needed time for these guys to play together and start to operate as a unit. Once that happened, the ground game took off.
Yeah.
And now everybody kind of understands the why, and you see, like, there's more consistency in some of the pre-snap motion where you bring Cole Kmet in as a wham blocker, not to geek out over how Ben Johnson schemes things. But everybody is bought in and understands the why of the offense, especially in the running game. I am somebody who thinks, though, once you get to December, this is kind of who you are. I don't think they're going to develop some air raid attack.
No.
Nor
do I think that's even the right course of action. That's not going to win you games. It's probably going to lose you more games than it wins you.
The hope, obviously, is that Caleb gets a little more accurate and that, like Ben Johnson said, you get receivers running their routes correctly. You know, you're not running. I'll tell you, with Olamide Zaccheaus, it's bothered me all year. And the way Ben Johnson framed it this week, I do think it's a player issue, not a scheme issue or a play call issue. They have run routes short of the sticks on third down so much this season that I haven't been able to understand it. But then the coach comes out and goes, they're running a little shallow, they're misrunning their routes, their breaks aren't clean, whatever it is. Do you change that on a dime in December? I don't really think so.
I think
you can get it a little better, but we're talking margins.
But when you're talking about homework type stuff, that feels like it can be cleaned up. Like, I'll tell you this, the penalties have been cleaned up significantly from 100%. What we saw the first quarter of the season.
100%.
And that, to me, is more of a homework, how prepared are you type of stuff. And to see that fix itself a little bit between the beginning of the season to where it is now is encouraging. So something like that where it's like, a little bit of the devil in the details type of thing. I think that you can. When you're talking about Caleb's accuracy and his footwork, that to me is a physical transformation that probably has to take place in the offseason.
Yeah.
That's not going to be something that magically corrects itself over the course of the final month of a year.
It's where, yeah, they can improve the pass game, absolutely. But if you're talking about meaningful improvement where you become a top 10 pass attack, I don't feel like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You can improve it marginally.
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is that they do.
Yeah. And to be honest, too, I think some of these passing numbers just look significantly better if A, there's less drops, and B, there's a couple balls that are just more, not even like on the numbers running in space type of level accuracy, but just a little bit more on target.
Yeah.
And where a guy can just catch and sit, and I think you'll see the accuracy numbers go up, and you'll see the yards certainly go up.
It's also the full body of work for the passing offense is going to end up looking pretty good. Caleb's going to have almost undoubtedly the best season in the history of the Chicago Bears as a quarterback this mm-hmm. year. Like, that's going to happen. So we are nitpicking to an extent, and it is a part of it, I think, critical downs, loud spots where Caleb misses a throw on third down. The Eagles game stands out, running the ball down their throat, and then you get into the high red zone, and all of a sudden you go pass, 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 and you're kicking a field goal. Like, those loud moments stand out, but the full comprehensive body of work is going to look okay.
Yeah. Jordan in Idaho, let's try you again here. What's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Happy Meat and Cheese Week.
You as well.
Hey, so, I guess my question to you guys is, with Rome being out, if Luther has an awesome day, I feel like the question is going to rise, probably in just the city of Chicago, but what do we do with DJ Moore? I'm not in the camp of getting rid of DJ, but my question to you is, what do you think we even get for DJ if he goes on that trade block?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jordan. I don't know what you're getting for DJ. You'll get something. It won't be a situation where I think you have to cut him. I think he's a respected locker room guy, too. But that, to me, that's an off-season 2026 type of question. We'll get there when we get there. For here and now, and I'll tell you this, the numbers aren't great on DJ this year. But I think he's been a very valuable contributor to the offense. He's had moments where he's been a good player and the wide receiver one on this team. And I think his dedication in the blocking game, really all the receivers' dedication in the blocking game, is not something that you can really overlook. And when you've got $25 million receivers blocking downfield with the aggression that DJ Moore is playing with, you don't find that very often. It's like him and Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the guys who make that caliber of money and have that dedication to blocking.
Yeah, I think, I thought there were times this season, especially early, where I felt like it was unlikely that DJ could return next season. And we're at a point now where I feel like it's a little more likely that he could return, just because I don't know what the trade return is going to be. And, like, if it's a third-round pick, is that valuable enough that you're moving on to save some money against the cap?
Third-rounder probably is.
You might pull the trigger. Look, whether or not he's here next year, that is a next-year issue. We're not moving on from him in December.
Yeah, so, especially on Packer Week, man.
And I think he's offered enough, like you said, in the blocking game. He's bought into the offense enough, especially lately. I'm fine with DJ.
Yeah, and listen, like, I'm not going to pay someone $25 million to be a blocking receiver. I think that's a waste of asset.
Of course.
You need the receiving production in tandem with that. You can find blocking receivers for $1 to $3 million out there. But you want to find guys that do both, because those guys are special, and it's why the run game has worked the way that it has this year. 312-332-3776. How do you feel? It's Bears-Packers week. How do you feel about the Bears' chances up at Lambeau later on today? 325 kick. You can hear it right here on your home for the Bears, ESPN Chicago. When we come back, though, let's talk a little college ball, because last night could have shook up the college football playoff a little bit. We'll discuss all that, recap some of the big games, including a big upset in the Big Ten Championship last night. That and more coming up next. Tyler and Shay.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
College football playoff rankings will become official about 2 hours from now. And they've got some decisions to make. based off of some of the results that took place yesterday. You had Georgia go out and thump Bama. That game was never close in the SEC title game. Georgia wins 28-7, dominant fashion there. The big result from Friday night was Tulane beating North Texas, so that all but locks up a spot for Tulane in the college football playoff. Texas Tech handled BYU. This was the most dominant performance of yesterday. 34-7 down in Dallas. And then I'll say this. I think this was the greatest four-point upset of all time. With what Indiana did to Ohio State, I don't think anyone really gave Indiana a chance yesterday in the game. But the spread was only showing four when it closed yesterday. And they go out and win against Ohio State in Indianapolis, 13-10. It was, I don't want to say it was an ugly game because I don't necessarily think that's what it was. Was just a game that felt like Saturday or felt like Sunday being played on Saturday. And that's what we saw in the Big Ten Championship. And then the real stunner of last night, Duke and Virginia in a game that could really turn the college football playoff on its head.
To be a fly on the wall in Jim Phillips' office right now, I would just love to.
Did you see the pain on his face when he had to give Duke the trophy last night?
Yep. Knowing we just zero-bit our league.
Yes.
It's incredible.
It felt like the call was in on that final drive. Like, Virginia was down 10 with, like, four to play.
There is a chance the ACC still gets a representative, depending on what the committee wants to do with Miami and Notre Dame. Because BYU lost, I think, convincingly enough that you can knock them out of being this placeholder squad between Notre Dame and Miami. And if they're that close together, I think the head-to-head has to be valued. And that's where...
I mean, they could be one spot away from each other.
Right. That's where does the committee just value the head-to-head? They value the head-to-head with Texas and Vandy, who are a spot apart despite Texas having an extra loss. Mm-hmm. So do they value the head-to-head if it's Miami and Notre Dame a spot apart? And then you end up without Notre Dame because James Madison and Tulane have to occupy spots. And Miami's the team that gets in. Jim Phillips still gets his rep.
Or is Bama on the outside looking in? Because of the fashion that they lost in, and they're a three-loss team, albeit an earned third loss that a lot of other teams didn't have a chance to go out and earn. And does Miami and Notre Dame get in, and Bama's left on the outside looking in for the second straight year?
Basically, Duke did a rescue job on somebody yesterday. Mm-hmm. It may have been both Bama and Miami. It may have been only one of them because Notre Dame occupies the spot. But Duke threw a life raft to Bama and Miami. One of them has to grab it.
Yeah.
We're going to find out who.
It's going to be interesting.
Can I also just say, like, Ohio State should be two, Indiana should be one.
Yeah.
The two best teams in the country played last night at 8 p.m. in Indianapolis.
Yes. I 100% agree with you. And I get Georgia's made a surge down the stretch here. They haven't lost a game since September, and that was a three-point loss to Alabama, who very well could be a playoff team. But you're right. 1-2 played last night. And I thought the only way one of these teams was going to... I never thought actually really that any of the teams in the Big Ten Championship should work their way out of a bye, regardless of what the result looked last night. But the way that it did play out, yes, clearly you saw the top two teams in America at Lucas Oil last night. It was such a great game. You had Fernando Mendoza on what was like, what, the second or third play of the game just get absolutely popped. And I was like, oh, man, Indiana's going to be down their quarterback the rest of the game.
Yep.
And work only a handful of plays into this one. He comes back out after he had to sit for one play and then just made some real big-time throws. The back shoulder fade on the touchdown, the deep ball down the sideline, the play that sealed the game, the big-time throws that he made yesterday. I thought we were going to see those throws out of Julian Sayin. But we saw them from Fernando Mendoza in this game. It won them the game. It won them the Big Ten. And it's going to win him the Heisman as well.
Yeah. I also thought those were the two best defenses in the country yesterday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Texas Tech obviously has something to say about that. And we'll see how that plays out through the playoff. But I haven't seen – nobody has bothered Julian Sayin all year. And Indiana had him in hell. Like, they put him in a torture chamber for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's been IU's calling card all year. They mentioned on the broadcast when they blew out Illinois, they had Luke Altmyer in hell. They sacked him 9 times. When they went to Oregon, I think they got Dante Moore 7 times. Like, they just, their D-line, that front 7, has been so vicious all season. And I didn't know if they had the horses to do it against OSU, but they put Julian Sayin in Alcatraz.
Yeah.
He was in prison.
And a lot of people, too, now talking, is Indiana the greatest turnaround in sports history.
There's no question.
There's one other that comes to mind, and it's Baylor basketball. Baylor basketball went from having a player kill one of his teammates to looking like one of the worst programs in all of college sports to winning a national title in the same century. Like, that to me is the only other one that, like, I kind of grapple with and be like, oh, okay, that's another one that was an all-time turnaround. Like, the story's not over on Indiana yet either. They still have to go out and prove it,
yeah,
it throughout the college football playoff, but you got a nice little head start here with the bye, and you're the last undefeated.
I think when you're talking about a school, a program that is tied for the second most losses in FBS history. Yeah.
That was a great stat yesterday, too. And yet Ohio State,
the second most wins,
yeah,
and Indiana, the second most losses. When you have the second most losses in FBS history, and then you just hire this Cignetti guy that everybody's like, what is this? And he has the moment in Assembly Hall, Google me, I win. Purdue sucks. Mm-hmm. By the way, Michigan and Ohio State suck too. And then you off Michigan and Ohio State in a season en route to a Big Ten title. It's incredible. If you had told me 5 years ago that Indiana would win a Big Ten championship, I would have thought you were out of your mind.
It's one thing to build it, and it's another thing to build something that looks sustainable, and this looks sustainable with what's taking place in Indiana. They're not going to win the Big Ten every single year. Ohio State's going to have something to say about that. But yeah,
so is Michigan State.
We'll see.
I keep waking up rich.
We'll see. Our video stream brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. During Chevy Red Tag, get 0% APR financing on a 2026 Chevy Silverado 1500 pickup. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy Silverado, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. When we come back, we will get into more Bears conversation. I want to dive into the passing game a little bit more because there is the significant injury today. No Roma Dunze for the Chicago Bears. How is that going to impact what they want to do through the air? And what can Caleb Williams do to get this thing on track as well? All that coming up in 2 minutes.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.